The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
WEEI Afternoons. We're reacting all in the first hour to a Celtics loss, a Celtics choke job at home to the Atlanta Hawks last night. And for here for more on that is Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston. Play-by-play, or color commentary, you should say, is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by FindMassMoney.gov. It's fast, it's easy, and it's free. Scal, how are we doing today?
Good. You guys?
Doing great. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of this game yesterday, there's one thing that I've been thinking about all day long after you guys' call of the game last night. And I want to know who it was that got you to stop making fun of the ball, because something happened, and clearly you guys were like, well, don't insult the ball. Don't talk about the ball anymore. And Carter was like, yeah, this ball stinks. And you're like, no. Don't talk about the ball. What's so special about the ball, and who ordered the code red on you guys?
Yo, somebody ordered a code red. You should have seen. You know, like, we got a text message that filled up the entire – and Drew Carter doesn't have, like, big writing like I do. Yeah. He showed me the text. I'm like, we got threatened that Adam Silver was going to make a phone call to us. It was like – it was a big-time code red. So
why are they sensitive about their stupid ball?
Well, here's the thing. Like, no, I mean, listen, I like to have fun with the NBA, you know, and, you know, I'm just like this. Like, when you see it is basketball, it's sports, like, people there are having fun. Like, let's be honest, like, you guys' job, my job, we have the greatest job in the world, right?
Yep.
It's great sports. But when there's a chance to, like, kind of make fun of something, make light of a situation, man, I'm telling you, people in the league office everywhere, they don't think this is all about fun and games, man. They were taking that really serious. It was like a touchy subject that I kind of like dove into and had no idea that it was like a point of contention. So, yes, we did get a code red, and I'm not telling you who it's from, and we just stopped it right there.
So, along those lines, I'm not even sure I should even ask this question, but are you a fan of the court and are you a fan of the cup?
I'm a fan of the all courts, not red, pink, or, you know, like, not even like Cleveland's maroon. I haven't seen the game yet, but red doesn't pop well on TV. I don't mind like my favorite color of the courts are gray. I like those the best. Like,
yep,
the blue's fine. You know, it's like you're playing on water or swimming pool or something like that. But I like it because it brings interest to the game. I don't know what to make of last night's game, to be honest with you. Like, why we played so bad and why we played like so non-aggressive. I give Atlanta all the credit in the world, man. I thought like they punched us in the mouth and they took our best punch and they sustained it. And they're talking about like seven of their, I think it was six of their top 10 players were out. And I was a fan of those guys when we blew them out. I was a fan of Johnson, Daniels, Richesse. Like, I was a fan of those guys. And the thing about me, just in general, I like big players that could like defend, and they're super physical, and those guys really like fit the bill. I think those guys could be better, but for us, like, it's plain and simple. There's a staggering number that I'm trying to get to the bottom of. So minus paint scores, like where you go to the paint and you score it, we had 7 paint touches where we kicked the ball out the whole game. And like, so just there's times where we have 21, that's on the low end, 35, 38, you know, like normally, like over the course of a game, you get a couple driving kicks, hit the paint, move it, whatever. We had 7. So, and I kept calling it out in the fourth quarter. I was like, man, we need to go to the basket here, and we got to do it with force. Like, stop limping into your drives. And we did it a little bit late, but we just couldn't get stops at that point. That team had a lot of confidence from, you know, they're living. They're like NBA players for the most part, when they get an opportunity to play against the best, they're usually like they rise up to a level. They think this is great. Like you can watch Atlanta play a lot of teams and they'll be sleepwalking. That's the reason why their record won't be good. But when they play, and we're finding this out, like every night the Celtics play, people are coming out trying to beat them. And it's cool to watch for me. Like I'm a broadcaster that loves basketball. I get to watch every team's best effort. And that's been nice, but the Celtics have to realize, like, this is what it's like. And I don't know what Joe Mazzulla's talking, like, target on your back or target on my forehead or whatever target he wants to talk about. I'll just make it simple. People are gunning for you, and they're trying to make their season by beating the Boston Celtics.
In the last four or five games, Scal, the Celtics have been getting beat on the boards pretty consistently. Is that a question of not having guys like Porzingis in the lineup, or is that a question of getting outworked?
That's a good, like, you know, I don't want to say, like, rebounding is not as cut and dry as getting outworked. Like, it's not like everything is starts and equal. Like, there's a lot of things, like rotation, create offensive rebound opportunities, driving. So you think about driving opportunities when a guy pulls over, creates shots at the rim, like opportunities at the rim. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just about rebounding. It's not just about size or anything like that. But it does seem like that. And this is, like, we got outworked on the boards, right? Like, that yesterday was as clear as could be. And I remind you, like, normally, you know, we win the rebounding battle because we're such a low turnover team. But we had 20 turnovers, and Atlanta still smacked us on the glass. That was the worst rebounding performance I have ever seen, like, this current Joe Mazzulla Celtic team ever have. So it was pretty bad last night. And the fact that we weren't, like, trying to counter and push it and try to, you know, a lot of times in the NBA, people don't crash because you'll get beat. Like, it's not college. Like, if everyone in college crashes, in the NBA, that gets you beat. You'll just give up layup after layup, and you'll have 30 points in transition or some crazy number. But we weren't doing that, and we were not securing the boards. And when we did, we wouldn't run. So, yeah, that was – yesterday was – it was to me, this season, that was as bad as it got. And I think they'll bounce back, and I don't know why they kind of laid an egg. You would think the NBA Cup and all that stuff would, like, bring a heightened sense of, like, yeah, this is going to be great. But we had it was just an awful, awful game for us.
So they have three losses, I think, much sooner than anyone expected them to have three losses. They lost that big game to the Warriors at home. There were all this talk of Olympic motivation. There was talk of they want to make history and whatever. Are you disappointed with the team, the way this team is playing? Are they underachieving right now, and is it simply about complacency?
No, you know what? You know what it is? I don't know how many times you guys have heard me in the past. Like, we're not great when teams are super physical with us and they're really handsy. And, like, the NBA, which, by the way, I personally like it. Like, I like physical basketball. They protect guys when they go up to shoot, but for the most part, they're letting two-hand checks, body bumps, and, like, all those things, right? And that's why I kept saying yesterday, like, you gotta punch through the initial hit because they're hitting you. When you drive, they're just trying to stand you up, and then we're, like, kind of countering. Like, our players, and Jaylen Brown is probably the best at doing this, is, like, getting downhill, coming to a jump stop. We got great shooting around and playing off 2 feet. There's times in the Indiana game where I kept saying, like, we're rushing the shots at the rim. And then in the third and fourth quarter, I think halfway through the third and the fourth quarter, they shot 78% in the restricted area. They, like, took their time. And they got to get used to the new NBA and how teams are going to be physical with them. And that's that. Like, the Celtics play basketball, and they're the lowest fouling team in the history of the game last year. They gave up the least amount of free throws of anybody ever. So they don't play that game. They're trying to play the game without fouling, keep the flow going, trying to force you into missing so you can get the rebound and go. But these other teams, they don't care, man. I think their coach is just like, guys, be super physical. Put two hands on them, bump them off their spots. We're going to rotate massive amounts of bodies at them, so don't worry about foul trouble. If you get two fouls, I'll just move you on to Derek White or Drew Holiday. So don't worry. When you're on Tatum and Brown, be super physical. And that's what I'm seeing. And we're not handling that right because we're not playing the fair game. They're being physical with us, and we're not doing that because, like, Joe's coaching philosophy historically, which is the reason why we won a championship, is, like, you know how he talks about margins. Margins have to do with free throw rate. He wants to give up the least amount. He wants to take the most amount. Mm. And so we're not a real handsy team. We're not a real, like, we're not putting two hands. We're not body-checking guys. We're playing pretty solid defense. And I think that's coming back to bite us, especially in the regular season, because if you go against a team that's handsy and you're not, well, you're probably going to have a tough time winning that game.
We're talking to Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston. Scal, is Cleveland for real, and do you think they can be the Celtics' rival this year?
They're for real. They play a lot like us. Like, when we're at our best with Pritchard and Hauser coming off the bench and just, like, bombing threes. So Cleveland bombs threes. They got my boy Niang. He's an awesome dude from Methuen. When Max Strus comes back, they got this kid Merrill. Ty Jerome is playing for them. Like, they have a second team that's, like, legit. Their first team, they have some, like, players that you can, like, kind of wind in the way they wind in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Like, our star players are better than their star players. But they have some guys like Donovan Mitchell can go out there with some bench guys and cook. And so they're kind of built like us, just not as talented as us. But, you know, their bigs right now, like they're probably – their bigs are better than our bigs because, you know, we don't have Porzingis playing yet. And Al Horford's, like, off and on, right? So, like, their bigs are pretty good. They're pretty active and live around the basket. They get way more paint opportunities around the rim, like a Jared Allen, than we do. So they have a little bit better – shot profile than we do, but I think ultimately, like, our size and physicality combined with our shooting is better than them. So that I would take us in the playoffs, but I think, like, during the regular season, I think we'll be fighting for the best record in the Eastern Conference.
This whole Jason Tatum shooting thing, it was an issue in the postseason, then the hitch was gone, had a pretty good start to the year, had a bad night last night. Are you monitoring the way Jason Tatum is shooting? Is it just going to be kind of ebb and flow, or do you think there's still reason for concern there?
You know, like, I think he is at his best when he works inside out. And inside to the paint, finishing around the rim or spraying the ball out, and then working towards out, right? So I like when, like, we'll see tonight. So you guys watch, right?
Yep.
Jason Tatum gets downhill. And then let's see what he does, if he moves it or finishes it. And then he usually, you know, will come in with the second group, like, you know, in that second quarter, and then he'll start, like, casting the threes. But I like when he starts inside to out. I didn't like the way he started the other night. And it was interesting because Brown really had it going. And then, you know, that was the first time Joe Mazzulla went with Brown and Tatum together for an entire quarter in the regular season. Like, they do it in the playoffs, but not in the regular season. So that was a unique rotation. But, I think, like, Tatum is such a – he's such a complete player that it all, like, kind of ties in. So I don't think you can take his shooting and just thin slice it. I think you got to, like, tie it all in together. So I'm not going to overreact. I do like his shot. I like the way he's releasing it. His hitch is gone. His release point is lower, which is all good things. But I think he's at his best when he's playing, like, aggressively in to out. And then once he gets a few to the paint, maybe a free throw, maybe a finish around the rim, a spray out, and then all of a sudden I think he can start cooking from the perimeter.
All right, we'll leave it right there then. Brian Scalabrine, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, Scal. That is Scal joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. If you missed any part of that, by the way, you can have it delivered. Go back and listen to the podcast anytime. Just subscribe to WEEI Afternoons on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcast. 617-779-7937. If you want to jump in on anything we just heard from Adam Schefter, anything we just heard from Brian Scalabrine. What we're going to talk about next, however, is the Boston Bruins, who may have given Jim Montgomery another stay of execution with a win and, I think, a little bit of an upswing going on right now. They've won four out of their last six. Could they be pulling themselves up by their skates? We'll get into all of that after Stiz gets you.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Caught up on what's trending. It's David Pastrnak. Bruins roar back in the third period to beat the Blues by a final score of 3-2 last night in St. Louis, and they needed that. I'll tell you what, they needed that one bad. That one is the difference between going 3-3 over the stretch as opposed to 4 out of their last 6, which I think is significant, and I'll get into that in just a minute. If you look back over the rest of the schedule, they haven't had a lot of stretches like this. This is one of their best stretches of the entire season so far, if you can believe that. And that's with a ugly overtime loss to Ottawa where Linus Ullmark didn't face a shot in the entire third period, not to mention your 4-0 shutout at the hands of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So the best stretch of the season so far from the Bruins also included those two losses. That being said, they have won 4 out of 6. They are over 500. They are five points away from the Florida Panthers at the top of the Atlantic Division. Have they cooled down Jim Montgomery's hot seat? I say today, right now, here on November 13th, yes, they've cooled it off. And I know I'm going to be jumping back and forth because this is the type of situation that they're in right now, hovering around 500, etc. And if they lose the next two, I'll be right back on the other side. But 4 out of 6 is what it is, and that was a good comeback win last night.
So the beauty of it is this falls totally in line with your mentality.
Yes.
They won a period.
Yes, basically.
Right? They basically won a period that changes your whole perspective. And I'm not saying you're necessarily wrong, but I still think he is teetering. They are teetering. I laughed out loud because watch the game, and like the first graphic they put up was Blues opponents have scored first in 7 straight games, and then it's 2-0 Blues in the second period. I'm like, ah, you needed a slump buster? The Bruins are here to help you out a little bit. And then they come back, and you know, I think he just called it an unlikely comeback or whatever. Well, it should be likely. It's a playoff team versus a non-playoff team. Like, the Bruins are supposed to be the better team in that matchup, and that's where they are. Like, they are walking a fine line between feel good, feel bad, fire the coach, momentum going in the right direction, bottoming out. Like, they're just, and therefore I think it's false hope. I think it's false momentum. I'm not really buying it yet. It doesn't feel significant or like it's evolving in a positive direction for me. And therefore I think we're just as likely in 2 days to be saying, like, now he's got to go. Now he's got to go.
It's entirely possible. One thing that gives me a little bit more hope, maybe, than you, is that Morgan Geeky scored a goal. And he got called back up. He got basically exiled and is now back with the team. And I thought, outside of just that one goal, I thought he was very active all throughout the game and is someone who last year I thought was going to make a step coming into this season. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to make that next step up to be a productive forward. So far, he hasn't been. It was the first goal of the year. And that, to me, is significant. And if it's something he can keep up, obviously, not if he just scores one goal for the whole season. But you know what I mean? Like, that seemed emblematic to me of, okay, here's Montgomery throwing everything at the wall, trying to get something to stick, sending guys down, bringing guys out, doing all this stuff. And Morgan Geeky was a guy right in the middle of that, emblematic, I thought, of the entire season so far. There was so much expected from a lot of these forwards, guys like Geeky. You know, it's just, I think he's a good example of that. Otherwise, like Charlie Coyle and other players here, forwards mostly, and we did get some unfortunate news here about their D-Corps, which we'll get to in just a second. That came out about an hour and a half ago, Jim Montgomery with a bad update on Hampus Lindholm. But for someone like Morgan Geeky, and really the entire offense, the forwards and everybody, Pastrnak had the game winner. Charlie McAvoy had a great shot, which Jim Montgomery went on and on about after the game as well, for the second goal. But Geeky's goal to me is one that I'm going to be keeping my eye on. I'm going to be keeping my eye on him, the way he plays out there, him and guys like Zaka, Coyle, other forwards who much more was expected of this year, and they just haven't delivered. And I think that, in general, that can be something that if you put eggs into that basket, if you put him into the secondary scoring basket and assume that, hey, you know, Brad Marchand's a year older and Pastrnak is going to be consistent, but he's not going to be able to carry the team with his goal scoring.
Yep.
Other guys are going to have to come out and do it. And how many years in a row following the Bruins? I mean, if you're a Bruins fan, you know this. Secondary scoring has been a big issue for them for decades. I mean, that's the way it is. And that's the way it's been. And that's how it was with Krejci and Bergeron and Rick Nash and Jerome Iginla and all those other guys that they brought in and cycled through over the years. It's a problem again here now. And if someone like Geeky can ease that burden and then get the other guys going, get Zaka going and Coyle going and the rest of these guys all going, not just the fourth line and not just David Pastrnak, then listen, not a lot of teams are really separating right now. Florida's 11-4-1. After that, it's Toronto at 9-6-2, and then there's you, all right? So you still have just as good of a chance to jump back into this thing as anybody else out there. And quite frankly, you've been underachieving, so you should.
So there's this weird thing developing for me. First of all, Monty Mack, who hates everything on Twitch, said they won the right period. Agreed.
Absolutely.
Win the third period, win the game, that whole thing. They've developed this weird, so we feel like they're underachievers and they're slow and, you know, there's a malaise and all these sort of negative descriptions of the way the season has started.
Yep.
But they have two overtime wins when a lot of people think their coach's job was on the line. They go down 2-0 in this game and come back in the third period to win 3-2. Pushes them. You're in the playoffs. Like, you're not really that far statistically from where people might think you belong, right? And it has taken some kind of backs against the wall performance. I mean, they only have 8 wins.
Yep.
And I'm talking about 2 in overtime where you get, like, there's this, I feel like they're an underachieving team who I don't like their fight. They're out of shape. They're this, they're that.
They've only won back-to-back games twice so far.
But they've done it when they need to, in a weird way. Like, forget the Florida games. You could say, oh, well, they needed to prove something against Florida. If you label those need-to games, then they didn't do it when they needed to in those
games.
No,
they didn't. No.
But a couple overtime games, this game, I feel like there's a little spunk developing to this team, and they're doing it the hard way. Like, they've made it difficult. Everything feels like a chore on the ice for them. But I do think they're starting to show a little metal or something. I don't know. It's a weird – I didn't see this coming. It felt like they were just going to bottom out. Their coach would get fired. You bring a new coach in. You hope you get a bump. You change the momentum of the team. Instead, maybe they're trying to save his job. Maybe Razor was right to start the year. Maybe when they're kind of backs against the wall, they are fighting for Jim Montgomery and trying to save his job. I don't know.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. Andrew Peak had an injury back on November 6th. He said it was going to be week to week. Now Hampus Lindholm has gone down with a lower body ailment. This came in the game yesterday, and they've made a move. Sweeney announced today that the team is recalling defenseman Jordan Osterley from AHL Providence. I may be pronouncing that wrong. Apologies to the Osterley family if I am. 32-year-old, kind of a journeyman. He's been around a little bit with Calgary, Detroit, Arizona, Chicago Blackhawks, Edmonton Oilers, etc. They're probably going to just have to plug him in there with the time that Lindholm's going to miss. And we found out today from Jim Montgomery that he is going to miss weeks. Hampus Lindholm, who, unfortunately, and I don't love Hampus Lindholm, but lately he's been your best defensive player. He's been one of your best defensive players, I should say, if not the best. And him going down right now at a time when the rest of them, I mean, McAvoy had a goal last night, but the giveaways have just been brutal lately with this team. And to lose him, there's complaints I have about him. I don't think he's the toughest guy in the world. He's a little soft, and he's had turnover issues this year too. But he's mostly gotten past that. And for him to go down like this right now is not very good time-wise. I mean, if you're talking about looking at this team in the one time where it seems like they're starting to put something together here, win 4 out of 6, it's a tough time to lose your best defenseman.
And building momentum, and then this is the area where I think we agreed a few weeks ago, like, if you could just get better in one area, like baby steps.
Yeah.
We talked about the decor and less turnovers, doing a better job on both ends of the ice, getting the puck out, and this is certainly not going to help that to lose Lindholm. And now, can they overcome it? Obviously, they can overcome it. Like, your guy, Swayman, step up, be better, right? Like, do some soul searching and live up to your paycheck a little bit. But for a team that is like spinning its wheels, they feel like Fred Flintstone. Like, I think they can get going, but they got to do the run in place a little bit before they get moving. This is a little bit more run in the place time.
Yeah. Lindholm was quarterbacking the power play as of late, I think for the last week maybe. And that's a problem. Brandon Carlo said that, you know, things are okay. He'll be back. And Montgomery had a funny quote, too. He said, it's going to be weeks, plural. Don't ask me next week. Which, you know, we'll see if you're even here next week.
I'm not sure we'll be able to ask you.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing. But, yeah, that's unfortunate. It's going to put a lot of pressure now on Brandon Carlo. Certainly, guys like Zadorov and Charlie McAvoy, who a lot was expected of anyway,
right,
are going to have to step up. You're going to have to step up now. Lindholm's been your guy,
problem.
And now it's time for these other guys to prove,
like,
what they are.
They already haven't been playing well as a group. I don't think, like, anybody has really stepped up, and now you're going to say, well, now I need you to step up to what I expected of you and step up even more to make up for the loss of one of your better teammates early in the season. It's not ideal, but feels like everything's going to be a struggle for this team. From Swayman contract.
Yeah.
Straight on through. Feels like everything's a little bit of a struggle. Like, they're even struggling to fire their coach. Like, even that didn't come easy. It's like, well, nope, we want to fire him. Keeps reporting. He is on the hot seat. Unless he turns this around. Has he turned it around? Has he turned it a little?
He's turned it a little. A
little bit.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a pivot going on.
It's like that train in the what's that Christmas movie? The,
Oh, the Express.
The Polar Express. When it's on the ice and it's like swerving one way, swerving, like overcorrecting back and forth on the way to
see Santa. The Polar Express almost crashed? I don't even remember that.
Yeah, they hit the ice. They come down that hill. And then there was like a flood and it's all ice and they're swerving left and they overcorrect left and they overcorrect right. That feels like the Bruins right now.
Man, I don't remember that from the Polar Express at all.
It's like a big scene.
That's
the guy with
the
red beard,
right?
He's in the train and the pin falls out of his throttle and like he's got to take his hair pin.
So this is like an action movie.
And all the moose are on the ice.
Then Jason Statham jumps in and he drives it right back.
I don't know how you could not remember this scene and have seen the movie. It's
I remember the book. I had the book. I remember my mother and father reading me the book.
Oh, I don't know if I've read the book.
But I don't remember there almost being
maybe they
crash.
Fluffed this up for the movie.
Maybe it was not in the book. Yeah, maybe it
that's
was just
possibility.
In the movie. That's
possible. Because it's kind of a pretty big
By the
scene.
Way, how much of an a-hole did I just sound like right there? Well, I've read the book.
Well, yeah,
the book's so much better than the movie.
Yeah, I hate
it is a kid's book. It is, true. But yeah,
it's not like a novel.
I'm not sure I've even seen the movie. Maybe I haven't.
Really?
But yeah, I didn't know that there was a near accident.
Yeah, I don't love the movie, but are you not a Christmas guy?
Love Christmas.
Then how? Yeah, I mean, you should see it. Then you get
sure,
a kid.
But now I did haven't had kids until recently, so I've not been watching the kids' Christmas movies. I love adult Christmas movies.
Excuse me,
what? Kids' Christmas movies?
Adult Christmas?
Debbie does
adult
Christmas.
Christmas movies.
Holy
yeah.
mo! Want to see my Christmas tree?
Santa and Mrs. Claus. You know what's up.
Good Lord.
But that's, you know what I mean, like a Christmas story. And
I watch all the movies. I'm a sucker for Christmas.
Okay.
Absolute sucker.
I love Christmas.
Everything Christmas. I've been looking at new things I want to. Have you seen, there's a lot more, like Fanatics is now selling Christmas shirts, like
really?
National Lampoon shirts and Clark Griswold. I'm a sucker for all that crap.
I saw a Clark Griswold nativity scene. It wasn't just Clark Griswold. It was the whole Griswold family, like a nativity scene with the house and the lights and all that.
Nice.
And it was hilarious. It's very probably blasphemous, like, you know, if you're a Catholic or whatever, but I saw it. It got served to me, like, in my Instagram algorithm, and I was like, this is awesome. And I looked it up. It was really expensive. I guess the guy, like, hand did them all.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is cool, but my 2-year-old will probably break it. And also, I'll probably go to hell if I put up a Griswold nativity scene.
Pretty sure you're going to hell either way, so.
Yeah, Jesus has a sense of humor.
Does he? Yeah. How come? Well, never mind.
No, say it. This is going to be good.
No,
say
it.
Get your finger on the button and you say it.
I was going to say, how come Catholics don't then? But that's
neither
here nor there. I'm Catholic, too. I'm allowed to say it. I'm Catholic.
I don't think it works that way.
Yes, it is. I'm allowed to criticize my own
Catholics
people.
Catholics don't have a sense of humor?
Oftentimes, I found no. And that's doing the Sunday service every week with Reverend Arkin.
Oh, that's right.
I got a lot of angry letters about that. You know what's funny? One of my former coworkers, this is a true story. One of my former coworkers was on vacation somewhere, and some guy came up to him, and he thought, oh, yeah, he must be a fan of my show. And they said, hey, you know, that Arkin guy, I don't like him doing that Catholic thing on the weekends.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, on a tropical vacation, sought this guy out and told him that. And I was just like, man, that's, you know, that's that famous Catholic sense of humor there.
At least you
made
a mark, though.
I did, I suppose.
Like, you cared enough on vacation halfway around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You made a mark.
I did, I suppose I did.
What do you think of a, speaking of things that are expensive, Christmas-related, there's a commercial floating around with a 9.5-foot-tall abominable snowman putting the light on top of the tree, you know, in Rudolph, the Bumbles bounce.
Yeah.
$498. What are your thoughts?
And you would put it in your yard?
Yeah.
No, son, it's going in the living room.
So it's like the big skeleton for Halloween, except it's Christmas.
Yeah, it's a Christmas skeleton. I like it. I'm into it. I think you should do it.
Is that too much?
It's a lot of money, yeah, probably more than you should spend on something like that, but whatever.
Then other thing is, it's not inflatable. It's like Stiz said, it's like those skeletons. It's,
yeah, where do you store that?
Yeah, where do you put that for the other 11 months of the year?
I'm sure it breaks down.
You think?
I would hope so.
Now
you gotta just leave it on your lawn.
No, not like deteriorates. Like you can detach it and put it and store it somewhere.
Yeah,
and
maybe I gotta look into that. Maybe that'll be the selling point. If it stores easily, and if my wife allows me, she doesn't have to know, right?
That's not very Christmassy. An abominable snowman.
It's yeah, like, I'm kind of redneck Christmas.
Okay,
I'm gonna be honest. My wife hates it. I got like a pig with a red bow on. That's an inflatable. I got
a pig
like
with
Grinch.
A red bow on.
Oh yeah, I got all kinds of stuff.
The Christmas pig.
I had a Bass Pro Shop boat that inflated. That was like Santa skiing, and a reindeer was driving it with a beer in his hand.
Wow, you are
like,
redneck Christmas.
Oh, absolutely.
That's redneck
My
Christmas.
My wife hates it.
Up and down. Right
absolutely.
There.
Huh, all that? In. Redneck Christmas, baby. MAGA heart.
I don't even have
celebrates the holidays the right way.
I don't even have a real tree. We have a fake tree.
Oh, don't get Andy going.
I know. It's not my call.
On my side, too.
Now I am. You converted me last year.
I taught Stiz about trees and eggnog. I brought his holidays to a new level last year.
That's right.
And I will try to help you.
It's not about me. If it was up to me.
Is it an allergy?
No. It's just, we just have a fake tree.
So you just don't have the pants?
Kind of. It's kind of it.
They are a pain in the butt.
They are a pain in the ass.
But they're awesome.
But they're
worth it. Well, this was, we moved. We were in an apartment. You can't have a real tree in an apartment.
Right.
We weren't allowed.
But you got a house
now. But
now
that we have a house, I was more into the idea of the real tree, but we still had the fake one, and we just said, just put it up, and, you know, we had the fake tree up. I think when George is a little older and he can recognize the difference between a fake and a real tree, maybe that'll matter, because I don't really care. Like, I don't really see what the big deal is. Like, you know, a real tree's fine, but I don't care enough to make it a whole thing when we already have one.
So you'll plant the seed with him to say he wants a real tree, and Mom will have to.
That's kind of the idea. Do you go with the star or the angel, by the way?
We have a star.
We go with a redneck Santa drinking a beer.
I got a Miller Lite can on top of my tree, baby.
It's a Trump head.
You know what you could do?
What's that?
Put a real tree in the backyard and light it up in the backyard where all those acorns are.
It's not a bad idea.
And maybe that's like a first step toward bringing it in the house next year?
I almost got all the acorns out. Now the leaves started falling on top of the acorns, so that added another layer to my life, which is just great right now. But yeah, I'm almost done with the acorns. They're almost all gone.
You hate being a homeowner with a yard, huh?
I hate the tree in my yard. Yes, I do hate that tree.
I got in trouble this weekend for trying to burn my leaves.
You got a red flag warning.
Yeah.
You're going to set the whole state on fire,
that's what the firefighter said. I went out and I bought
firefighters came?
Yeah, they did.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I went on Facebook Marketplace and I got like a barrel and then I cut like a steel barrel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 55 gallon. I cut the top off. I drilled some holes in it. I was like ready to go. Oh. Sunday afternoon, I got my iPad out there. I'm watching the Pats game. I'm burning some leaves. I'm like,
woo!
Donald Trump won America, baby. And the next thing I know, three firefighters turned the corner in my backyard and they were like, yeah,
Jesus.
Bud, come on. What are we doing?
Yeah, they're actually telling people not to use like power equipment, lawnmowers, because they can throw a spark and could ignite something.
Yeah, they don't want you to use water as much right now.
Yeah, no, it's serious. We haven't had any rain. Everything's dry.
They're saying don't use power tools?
Like lawnmowers or even like quads, don't go in the woods.
Anything with gas?
Anything that has like an exhaust and a spark and a hot and could create a fire.
Oh.
Because it's been so dry, plus it's so windy, been windy lately. There's been a lot of forest fires.
Has been windy, that's true.
Jeez.
How did we get on this?
I don't know.
We're talking Bruins.
I blame the host.
10 minutes on Christmas.
I blame the host.
617-779-7937. Dan Orlovsky, at one time, a vocal, full-throated critic of Drake May. Now he is Drake May's number one fan, even passing Andy Hart and Chris Schein. Unbelievable, isn't it? We'll get to that next. Dan Orlovsky, former friend of this time slot. Not anymore. But
what'd you guys do?
We replaced him with Schefter, I think is what happened.
Oh. Could have both.
That's above my pay grade.
Did you guys drive him away?
I don't think so.
Jones?
We had a nice relationship with Dan.
Jones drive him away?
I mean, it's possible.
He tends to do that.
He does.
To be a bit off.
Scal stuck around. Dan, we had good interviews with Dan, I thought, and he's always defended Mac Jones. He's very consistent. You got to give him that. He'll defend quarterbacks to the end of the earth. But with Drake May, he didn't for some reason. And back in August on Get Up, Orlovsky said, "You could not pay me enough to start Drake May. I wouldn't do it, and I wouldn't let anyone convince me otherwise." That was in August. In September, on the Rich Eisen show, Orlovsky said, "You could not tell me one thing or pay me enough money to play Drake May meaningful snaps this year." He also said he would only consider playing May in December when the season is winding down and the Patriots don't have playoff hopes. And he even waited until October when the Patriots made the call to start Drake May, and he called it a, quote, bad decision.
Hmm.
So, he really hung on and held out as long as he could.
Which I like.
And I appreciate the consistency, yeah. Dan. I do. But I didn't really hear a whole lot of, wow, I was wrong. Oh, man, I blew that one. Oh, geez. I really had a wrong idea here about Drake May. Not that you have to do that. Not that you have to go, you know, hat in hands, being all contrite about it or anything, Dan. But come on. this, you can't just swing from worst thing ever, couldn't pay me enough, bad decision all the way over to Pats fans should be giddy without a little bit of self-reflection there. I think that is also owed to this process.
Yes, but I also can appreciate how much he appreciates Drake May.
Yeah.
And I would include...
Well, he's a quarterback. He likes all quarterbacks.
No, I know, but he didn't really appreciate him in the summer, right? Like, he saw flaws. He saw things that needed to be worked on.
Right.
And he's talked a lot about, he's done a great job with his footwork, and he's improved that. But some of it is just the words he's using, giddy, over the moon. He even said, like, I think he made a noise at one point, just like a grunt or something, like out of joy. And he is in love with Drake May. And he's supposed to be an expert, right? Like, he's the Mona Lisa Vito. Like, this is his area of expertise. And that he is so giddy about him. And I would throw Chase Daniel in there. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. He did one of these videos where he was pretty over the moon giddy about Drake May. And, yeah, it emboldens my view. Because who am I? It's just whatever. You're not even a football guy, according to Ross Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
But when a quarterback expert, a whisperer, a guy who could probably be making money as a QB coach, he could probably train draft picks if he wanted to.
You think
with,
so?
With his sort of, didn't he say he's had people talk about offensive coordinator with him? Or?
Yeah, but Francesa used to say that too. And, you know, Bedard used to talk about
not everybody's
staffs
lying.
And stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, Orlovsky did play. He wasn't good or anything when he played, but he did have a long career.
Hello, Alex Van Pelt.
Sure.
He
Absolutely.
Wasn't good either.
Yep.
He's the offensive coordinator that everybody's praising right now for making Drake May who he is.
Right. But then why isn't Orlovsky getting those kind of calls? You know,
like maybe
why?
My guess is he's got a young family.
Mm-hmm.
He likes his life and he's making good money and working his way up the ladder, not dedicating 6 days a week for 20 hours to coaching.
I don't know. He's on TV a lot. Dan Orlovsky's on TV a lot. I see him all the time.
Bet you his schedule's better than the coaches.
Football show. That could be true. And you might be right there. And listen, I have no idea. I do think Orlovsky's very good at his job. And I think that his evolving take on Drake May is something that I certainly can relate to. I wasn't a big Drake May mm-hmm. fan in college last year. I was monitoring that because the Patriots were so bad and looking at who these quarterbacks were, and I wasn't really super into any of them. I like Daniels the most, which I feel good about, but I didn't like May, and I didn't like Williams, and I thought McCarthy wasn't anything, and I kind of like Penix and Nix a little bit, but as later-round guys. Like, I didn't think those guys would be going top 15, and they did. So, you know, everything I kind of thought about this QB class ended up getting turned upside down, except for the Daniels thing. And I've evolved my take on Drake May. I thought Drake May was going to be much more of a project. I thought he was going to be a lot more raw. I didn't think there was going to be a lot of the intangibles that you saw on display so quickly. I thought those are things that, you know, you have to work on. And when you have such a bad team around you and such inexperienced coaches and all these other factors that were going to play into it, which I'm sure Orlovsky, I mean, that's half the reason. It wasn't because of Drake May necessarily. He said you couldn't pay me enough to play Drake May because of this team and this coach and the rest of it. I mean, that was a big part of it for me. And I also didn't love his tape and collar, you know, in that last year. So I thought all of those factors together pointed to a not super well thought out plan. You know, that's sort of what it looked like to me. It looked like the Patriots were kind of flying by the seat of their pants and saying, hey, so long as we get one of these quarterbacks and he's good, everything else is just going to fall into place. And I hate that. I hate that whole line of thinking.
And you hate that they're right.
Well, I don't think everything's falling into place around them right now, do you?
No, but it's falling into place where he's fine.
He's good, but the rest of the thing...
winning games, he's making... Well, game.
He won a game.
He's winning game, and he's making plays, but that's the reality of it. And I agree with you in that it's so simplified that it's annoying.
Right.
But the Bears are the counterexample. You loved what they did in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, but they don't have as good of a quarterback.
The quarterback's a dink, and it feels like he's tearing everything down from the inside.
Yeah. Although, in fairness, I mean, he has had some pretty good games this year.
Yeah.
And May hasn't reached that level in the NFL yet, so maybe there's a crash going on right now. But the rookie wall is a real thing. That happens. And he's been playing since week one. So if May played from week one, maybe we'd be saying something different about him, too. But I don't know that. I mean, there's no way to know that. I think attitude-wise, it's pretty clear they're very different.
Correct. And that would be my point. When the going got tough for Caleb Williams, it fell apart. The real Caleb Williams came out, right? Like, and it's been costing people jobs and maybe cost him his job. Maybe mm-hmm. he'll get benched at some point. The going's been tough for Drake May. He took over a team that had one win.
Yeah.
He took over saying, I'm basically getting this job because we just need a win. We just need to win a game. We need to find a way. We need to make plays. We need to get the ball down the field. And he's done all of those things on some level. So I'm not really worried about Drake May hitting a rookie wall or falling apart. He'll have bad games.
Yep.
I don't want to say, oh, no, he's going to have smooth sailing the rest of the year. But I think he's going to be fine in that regard. And the thing that is most exciting, I guess, from this perspective is, so the expert is just looking at throws and coverages and, well, I'll show it to you from the all 22, sure, this angle, that angle. Maybe the most impressive thing is all the other stuff. So I'll let the expert break down for 3 minutes on his little video how great Drake May is. I'm just like, that's a sweet throw. Well, it was a little video.
Doing your little videos.
I mean, when you post a video on Twitter that I can, like, hear your kid in the background, it's a little video.
It's a little video.
You're not in a production studio putting, you're doing a little video in your kitchen. And that's fine. I love it. We watch it. We talk about it. We play the audio. But from my perspective, what I see that's just as much important is the leadership and the things we've talked about, us talking to him, things coming naturally, the way he does go to every lineman after the game when he's mic'd up, the ability to put his coach over, so to speak, even when it wasn't great, now when it's actually trending maybe in a more positive direction, that gets easier. He has supported Alex Van Pelt nonstop.
Yep, definitely.
I don't know whether he really loves Alex Van Pelt, whether he really thinks Alex Van Pelt's a genius and has really taught him everything he knows kind of thing. He's made us believe that.
Yeah.
He's sold us on that. And then you mix in the actual on-field throws and throwing guys open and the Hooper throw and this throw and the running ability. And he looks like the total package. Like, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves. He's played 6 games. He's started 5. He's got 1 victory in which he actually got to walk off the field and shake hands in that victory. But he feels like he has the total package. Somebody, a buddy texted me today, so really, what do you think about May? Like, I'm not telling it honestly on the radio. I go, I'm all in. I am
actually
sold.
I think he sucks.
No, like, all in. I am sold. He is a stud, and when you surround him, I think you have a top 5 to 7 quarterback in the NFL in within a year, year and a half, whatever.
I'd like that to be true. I think you're also, you know, this was your take before they drafted him, and you're happy true. To see it start to be supported, and maybe you're a little biased because of that. But I think in general, he does look like he has all the tools. I mean, I agree with you there. He does look like he has all the tools. Putting it together is another thing. Getting the team around him is the main thing. I mean, that's the holy grail here, isn't it? That's the that's the biggest challenge that Drake May is going to face, and it's nothing he can do about it, which I feel like is, you know, it's sort of a helpless feeling, I would think, for a guy like him, knowing, hey, you know, I've got the ability here. I've got the ability to go out and make plays and win games and lead this team and lead these guys and represent the team well and sell jerseys and all that stuff. But the stuff that I can't control may end up being what sinks this? You know?
And it, not only could it sink it, it could sink him, and not only just in terms of success, but also he's just happy to be playing, right? He's a 22-year-old rookie.
Right.
He called himself today a young adult, which just stuck out to me. Like, he doesn't even see himself as a man. He's like in the young adult section at the bookstore, Barnes & Noble's, mm-hmm. like teen fiction or something.
Reading Hardy Boys books.
Right. But in 2 years, if the line still stinks and his receivers still stink, that's going to grow more frustrating, right? Like, it's first thing, honeymoon period. I'm just happy to be on the field making throws. Yeah, they're not great, but they're my guys and I love them. He's not going to love them if he's still a 4-win team in 3 years and his receivers drop balls or aren't in the right places or his line is getting him sacked or he's running for his life. So I hope that doesn't break him, and I hope that Elliot Wolf has the ability and the opportunities to kind of improve some of that.
617-779-7937, your phone number. Tim is in Brockton. Go ahead, Tim.
It's like you guys work for the Drake May brand or something. It sounds like you're trying to pitch us in a corporate office. It's like he played a few games, guys. Like, this is sounds like what you guys did with Mac Jones.
No.
You get your spirits too high.
No.
Yeah?
No.
Let him go, Andy. Tim, go ahead. Tim, Andy, don't interrupt him. Go ahead.
It sounds like you're reading a script off of Mac Jones season 2. The same talking points you guys spoke about Mac Jones the second year. It's the same thing. The kid's ceiling is what? What's the guy from the Jaguars? Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence?
No, the kid's ceiling
Trevor
is Josh
Lawrence.
Allen. Yeah,
I think
top 5
quarterback. Ceiling's Josh
no,
Allen.
No way.
Absolutely.
Ceiling's
no
Trevor
way.
Lawrence?
Absolutely.
No way.
What, are you a hater?
So you want him to lose like that? Like, come on. Come on. We need a Lamar Jackson.
Oh, you mean a guy
Lamar
who's
Jackson
also never won? That was
great.
A terrible
What's he
argument.
Ever won? Yeah, come on.
A guy who wins MVPs but can't beat Patrick Mahomes and can't get to the Super Bowl? Right?
I'll take the same guy.
I'll
take an MVP. They're not the same guy.
No, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson are the same
Drake
people.
May and Lamar Jackson.
They've never
the
won a damn
guy.
Thing.
True.
They're great individual players that, now, Lamar has the MVPs. I would say Josh Allen is MVP-like.
Yeah,
in
he's
terms
MVP
of his,
adjacent. Yeah.
Right. So I want more than that. Yes, I want a great player, but I want a great player that gets over the hump and wins. Absolutely. But the reason I interrupted him, I never said anything great about Mac Jones.
I know, neither did I.
I thought he was a run-of-the-mill quarterback. Yeah. I thought he took advantage of opportunities, and I thought he might be a game manager good enough. Absolutely. If you were going down the Mac Jones road, you had to build a top five roster.
Yep.
You had to try to do the thing where, like, people are watching from afar and they're like, I don't really think he's that good, but he wins. He had to be that kind of quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
This is the opposite of that. This is a guy that everybody looks at it and goes, that guy's pretty good. He can run. He can throw back across his body, late, no look, everything. So that drives me nuts. You know, the only thing more annoying than comparing Drake May to Mac Jones is when people tried to tell me that you could compare Mac Jones to Joe Burrow because they were both one-year starters who won the national title in college. It was the dumbest comparison ever.
I don't remember that, but I'll take it.
Oh, there were lots of them. I used to fight them.
Burrow and Mac Jones, I don't remember.
Because they put up similar numbers. Mm. They both had great years in which they won.
Years?
No. In college.
Okay, in college.
And everybody's like, yeah, they're the same. They're the SEC. LSU won it. Alabama won it. I was like, so you didn't watch a single game. Because if you watched a single game, Joe Burrow and Mac Jones are not alike. We had a host at the station, Mutt, who I had to convince of it. And I made him go back and watch highlights of both from college on YouTube. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. They're not the same.
Like, wow, you had a film session.
Kinda. Well, when you got to prove your point and people are ignorant, you got to teach them.
Mm, I guess. I'm probably not going to sit for a film session in case we have.
Okay, well, I'll send you a clip on a text or something.
No, I'm not going to watch.
You're not even going to watch that.
Nope. 617.
See, that's the stubborn nature that I can appreciate.
617-779-7937. The Patriots, right now, I would say are a team in maybe on their way to something better than what we're looking at right now. We talked with Adam Schefter about the NFL and where all these teams are and why there's so many 3-win teams and if any of them have any kind of prayer of getting out of where they are right now and maybe sliding into the playoff picture. The Patriots were not one of the teams that he mentioned. However, we will revisit.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.